much funding for schools for black. And my daddy was quite interested in education, New Children's School Board, and initiated building a school, a high school out here. And I was a member of the first graduating class out there.
At Rosenwald?
No.
Oh.
You remember I told you to finish twice.
Right. Okay. Yeah,
well, this is the first time. And at the time, I knew he had told us, well, it was two of us and the same children in the class, but he told us that we weren't going to get credit. Now, that's simply because the school has a criteria set for high school, and that first year, the lab, the sun, it didn't come up to par. He knew that. It wasn't up to par. But he says, if I let you move you all the way and get some, so that's the plot. The school won't be finished. Because other people moved out here, of course, it was just a few hours anymore. So we stayed. Then I had to, after I graduated, I was valedictorian class out here. We had to go back to, then I had to go down here to Fairmont Rosenwald. Next year, I think it was maybe just 3 months, get a certified diploma. That's why I said I had to graduate twice. So
right.
Yes.
Amazing.
So that's what's happened there.
Okay.
Work year student in 1940. That's a work year student. When in work year student, you went to school.
Okay. We call them work study students.
Well, right. Yeah. So that's the new name.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, and then occupational experience. Do you want to include your Army? This is tape 10.21.03-AT. The interviewee is Mr. Angus Thompson Sr. We're at his house in Lumberton, North Carolina. The interviewer is Melinda Maynor. So, Mr. Thompson, maybe you could start by telling us about your father and telling us about his starting the NAACP chapter in Robeson County, kind of that time period, what you were doing then, some of the things that were going on here.
Well, the NAACP chapter was initiated here in Robeson County by my father during the time that I was overseas. And I was overseas from 1942 to 1945 when I came home. My father was very much interested in civil rights as well as education. And he would step out in front as a leader in civil rights and what he could, even in education. My father was never, I don't think he even ever finished high school, but he was very intellectual and was considered a leader here in the county, church and community activities.
What kind of work did he do?
Brick mason at the farm. Mm-hmm. Yes. After he quit the farm, he became a brick mason and laid brick. In fact, he learned to lay brick when he was chairman of the school board out of Bank Swamp and was building that school. Mm-hmm. Under a good friend of his, Professor Isler, who was a regular old brick mason. And that time he learned to lay brick right out there. He was also chairman of that school board, and that's why he had Professor Isley out there That's a construction builder.
So when you were, before you went to the war, where were you attending school?
I attended school at Back Swamp. That's where I finished. I was a member of the first class that finished high school at Back Swamp. After the high, was a member of the first class that we might call high school class. At that time, our classes, high school was from 8th grade through 11th. We didn't have 12th grade at that time. So that was where I was living, out there, and that's where I finished. But because of a lack of accreditation for that school for the first year, science department wasn't up, library department wasn't up where we could get the credit. So I had to spend 3 months at Rosenwald in Fairmont the next year to get certified, my certified diploma.
Your actual high school diploma.
The high school diploma. So, now, after I finished school right here in 1937. That was at Bank's Room. In 1938, went back 3 years at, 3 months at Rosenwald and got a certified diploma. After that, I worked in the tobacco 1939, tobacco markets in Durham, and on the tobacco markets here, and in 1940, I'd saved up enough money to enter Hampton Institute. That's when I entered Hampton Institute on September the 9th, 1940. Mm-hmm. As a work-year student, that's what we were called. And then in 1940 was when the call for all men the age of 21 to go to the local board for registering for the war. That was in October 1940. My second year in school, then is when they called me to go into the service. And of course, I got a deferment twice. The third time, they didn't grant me a deferment. Told me that I'd have to report to my local board for service, which I did. So in 1941, I left school in October, on October 16th. Came home to my local board and was inducted into the service on November the 19th. And from that date, I was discharged from the service October 1945.
Okay.
So.
And you returned home.
Returned home.
Yeah.
And went back to school at Hampton. and there for in the trade school. I didn't go back. When I first went, I went in the ag department. But after I came back, I went to the trade school and finished trade and tailoring. Then came back home and worked for a few months and a few months with another tailor who was ready to set up here. And then went into tailor business for myself, right here on the Fairmont Road. That's what it was then. It's Martin Luther King Jr. Drive.
Right. Now, did you get involved in the NAACP when you came back and started working?
Not immediately. No, I was a member, but so far as I can hold an office, no. But I did, after my dad's passing, I became a president of the chapter for a couple of terms.
Mm-hmm. And when did he pass away?
My daddy passed in 1973.
Okay.
1973, April 25th. Mm. Yes. But, and then after he passed, really my mother was the one that was, which was his wife, trying to hold it up, keep it going. But one thing, after the county chapter was organized, then all the municipalities here formed chapters. Fairmont, Red Spring, St. Paul, Maxton, and Roland, and Lumberton. All of them formed.
Okay. And they now, formed after the county, after your father formed the county chapter.
Oh, yes. There was no kind of chapter in here until Daddy, the chapter formed in maybe 43. Mm-hmm. So we went that way until with all these chapters operating here until maybe about 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, all the chapters we were slow and not doing too much, even Robeson County. So the state national office advised all the chapters in this county to merge into one chapter.
And that was just here recently?
Yes, that was just here recently, uh-huh. 4 or 5 years uh-huh. ago. So we did that, and it's basically that way now. All merged into the Robeson County chapter. Okay. And that's the only chapter in the county right now that's mm-hmm. that's active and got a charter. Mm-hmm. The Robeson County chapter.
Did you think that... or I should say, how effective was the NAACP, did you think, in the 1940s and the 1950s? What kinds of things was the organization doing?
In the 1950s?
Yeah.
And the 1940s? The NAACP at that time did a lot of fighting for people who were accused of certain crimes and things of that nature, that felt that that the NAACP felt sure that they wasn't receiving justice in and things like that. Now, NAACP became active in the school integration, well, it was I've been in school immigration during the 1950s, but the NAACP was the it was working from the national level instead of this county level mm-hmm. at that time. Mm-hmm. We even had Thurgood Marshall, who was general counsel for the national NAACP, to come in and speak, and that was in September 1952. And why that stands out, that was the year Hazel came through, in September 1953, 52, and he was delayed. It's the flight, flight was delayed coming in. So he was late getting here that night. And after he did come here and speak and everything, he went back, and at that particular time, I think they had their, at that time, the NAACP on a national level was fighting hard for integration and had the suit, was already initiated to integrate the schools on the basis that separate but equal was unconstitutional. And in 54, I believe, that's when the NAACP was successful in getting the Supreme Court to pass the law that separate but equal was unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm. What was your reaction to that ruling?
We were overjoyed. Now, we knew at that time it would be a slow process because tradition is not a easy thing for anyone to get out of. Naturally, we knew that to integrate the schools was going to be tough and slow because we knew that white folks were not, they wasn't ready for that. They wasn't used to it. I can understand that very well. But that didn't make it right. So we kept fighting. We kept fighting. Mm-hmm. And what really set the ball rolling was whenever the U.S. Supreme Court ruled on Brown versus Topeka that separate but equal was unconstitutional, and the Justice Department President ordered that to integrate the school out in Arkansas. Now that started the ball rolling. Mm-hmm. And of course out there, the same as this year, the resistance, even the governors wasn't ready. And naturally so the governors, they represented the people and naturally gonna try to satisfy the people. And at that particular time, I never will forget it, this was the first one. At that time, the governor was Faubus out there. It was Governor Faubus. And, of course, all these southern governors was against school integration. And they're just reluctant to do it. But, and these southern governors, they went against it. They were slow. They just wouldn't accept it. And what they did, I hear in Arkansas, Robert took the room at the just part. Ish told him to open the doors and let them integrate the schools. They took the governors took the initiative to put place their state national guards in the school door to keep them from going after blacks from entering after it has better been ordered to do so. Mm-hmm. But that was very easy because he took after Garbus put the guards there to keep him out. I never forget this because Eisenhower, general, he was president at that time. He was general when I was in service, but he was president. He took those same guards out there in Arkansas and federalized them, so you won't even have to move. Federalized them. They had that school. They were ready placed there by the state to keep blacks out. He federalized them, said, now, you all make a way and clear out so the blacks can come in. That's what's happened. That's what happened. Mm-hmm.
But, and was that happening here in North Carolina?
Oh, no, not at that time.
Mm, what was happening
that,
here?
That started it. Well, we could fight. Well, the first thing, after that, that was national. That was for naturally. If it was for Arkansas, it was an order for everybody. They passed an order to start segregating the schools. Let's see how the Justice Department told them to do it. I'm trying to think of the word that they used, but slowly do it. That was what they was telling them to do. But as I said, all of them bucked up. So after they were moving slow, then the Justice Department turned around and told them to speak, trying to give them a time, speed up the immigration. And of course, then it was just that the school had to be integrated, but every school system in the South, the school boards were trying their best, and the state, even our state legislature, what they did, they drew up a plan. They'd been ordered to do it. How they were going to integrate. And our plan, the state of North Carolina legislature, was named the Pearsall Plan. Pearsall was legislator up there. Yeah. Now, the Pearsall Plan still had factions in it to still keep the schools integrated. They started building. After they started building schools for blacks after the red order, and build schools in black communities and the white schools in the white communities. So after the Justice Department got into that, they started, I told them, they want to know how we're going to integrate them. They said, you have to bust them. You have to bust them to integrate them. Because if you use neighborhood schools, it's still, it wasn't integrating. School in the black and doesn't even go to it, but black. School in the white, go to it, but white. But they started busing, and that busing was very effective. Even right here in the Lumberton, asked for a bond issue, to build two high school, a high school over here in the South, which is predominantly black. A high school over in Lumberton, North Lumberton, which is predominantly white. Now for the two schools, the bond was, that's for a bond issue of $1.5 million. $1.5 million. And it was stated, the $500,000 to build a school in the South Lumberton, and $1 million to build the one in North Lumberton. Mm-hmm. Well, I was fighting that myself, this hook, line, and sinker.
And so this was the early 1960s, right?
Yes.
This bond issue.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I was fighting that hook, line, and sinker. Because at that time I had my oldest child, Michelle. She was 4 years ahead of our second child, which was only child. That was academically. She was 4 years ahead of her. And so after they got this school, after the bond issue passed, after the second count, it fell through the first time, but it passed the second count. They built two schools here. Built two. One in South London, one in North London. And then after they did that, and that was taken to the Justice Department, they found it out. They ordered this school system. You won't have but one high school in London. So my daughter was a member of the last class that finished the black high school over here. They had to shut it down and use it for a junior high. And that's what it is today, a junior high. Mm-hmm. It was the only junior high in the city. And the white one became the only senior high school in the city. So regardless of what color you were, you had to, if you were senior, you had to go to the same school. You had to go to the same junior high.
Mm-hmm. How successful did you feel like the Justice Department's solution was?
It was just what we needed. Mm-hmm. If that hadn't happened today, this day, if that had not happened today, we'd be right at the brink of where we were when we were freed from slavery. But that started not only in the schools, it started immigration at the lunch counters, immigration buses, immigration motels, and all of these establishments. They were fighting it, but the Justice Department was pushing it. That was all over the South. And today, it caused one race to realize that there's smart people in all races. It caused them to realize that blacks as well as whites if they have an opportunity, could advance, progress, just as they have. And through the generation, it has caused even this younger generation become less well, they're basically colorblind now. The children, the white children today, the black children, or any minorities, Indians, old. Naturally, now I must say this: the discrimination and segregation amongst each race itself, to a certain degree, you're going to find that. But today, the races intermingled and commingled. And what has brought it about is just this initiation from the school desegregation plan. Now, it's true right now that we have a lot of whites. We also have a lot of blacks. We got the old 40. But still, we got some blacks. They don't want. Of course, most of them back on now. They don't like mixing the races. And white, they don't like it. But we're in a place that we can't help ourselves because we don't, after our children reach a certain age now, we lose control over them. They go for themselves, and that's the way they should be going. Can't wait until 40, 50 years, turn them loose. So. It's just been a blessing. You know, it's just, you know, I've seen things take place. Yes, a lot of that would have been me during my time. I've been hanging on the tree. Hanging on the tree. I've seen the time in this area. A smart black man couldn't show up so much. He just had to shut up. If he did, they'd call you smart. Maybe flog you to death. So I give God the credit for all of this. But it has brought the races closer together.
What did you think? What did you think about what Indians were doing at that time in the early, late 50s and early 60s? Say the KKK thing. How did you react to that?
Oh, that was marvelous. That was marvelous. Now, at one time, I want to say this about the Indians, the black population was heavier than the Indian population. Most Indians, they nest, they lived everywhere, but the nest was in the Pembroke area. And of course, the whites was against them, just like they were against blacks, but they accepted the Indians, as I saw it, a degree above the black. It was like this, well, if we're going to have one, the mango red, nice David. Prefer the Indian race, and you may see a little of that now. Life is just real. That's just the way it is. But again, we all got a lot of prejudice. black races feel oppressed too, and all other races. We got that. That's human nature. But yet, if we're going to call ourselves Christians and things, we must struggle to get beyond some of that stuff. In order for us to be successful, and have a successful society, we must work together.
Did you feel like there were Indians that didn't want to work with blacks at that time?
Well, no, to start with, not it might have been, to start with, they partnered with the blacks. I can remember clearly, that's the way we had to vote. The blacks and the Indians would get together to, when it comes to elections and things like, the vote. And we have a little of that now. But the population of the Indians is the greatest population out of three races now. Right. They're much more independent now than they were back then. And
was it more equal back then, the population?
No.
Or who was dominating?
The white was more dominated. And our population was greater than the Indian population. But now, the Indian population is greater than the black or the white. Of course, back in that time, I could see that coming myself. I give the Lord the credit because I even spoke to one of the Indian leaders that lived right across here from me. We were getting ready for election. Came over here and sat down on the porch and we talked. I said, well, I said, Worf, that was his name, Worf Hunt. I said, now, it's true that we got to work together to have any say-so in this county. We need white folk. I said, because we outnumbered. We all knew that. We knew that. I said, but you know what? I see this. I told him, I said, now, it looks to me like that time I could see the Indian population just beginning to grow. I said, looks to me like, I said, in 5 or 10 years, the Indian race looked like it's fixing to double their population. And he admitted, he said, well, since you said that, says, that's what we plan to do. Mm-hmm. I said, your plan to take this county back over. Jokingly, I said that, but I know that the Indians felt like the land had been taken from them. And if I'd been in the shoes, I perhaps would. If there's any way to take it back, take it back. But I'm caught in the middle. Out here.
Right.
Being a black man.
Uh-huh. How did that change or shape your strategy for dealing with the problem?
Well, to tell you the truth, it didn't. It has changed a little. Right now, I'll tell you this. When we used to partner with the Indians, there are some cases now that we might even partner with the whites. But back in then, we couldn't partner with the whites, though they didn't want us no way. I can remember very clearly the first time that a white ever came to me and was a white running for county commissioner. And this commissioner came to me asking me about how I felt about a runoff. The And I told this commissioner, I said, well, I said, you know, it's something to know that you've come to me. I said, never before have the white folks' eyes been open enough to see that they might need black support. Because we were openly told they didn't care about our vote. But anyway, I told this commission, I said, I just had thought. And actually what the commission was doing was asking me, she didn't put it that way, but I knew what it was asking me, did I think I could get enough support to get in.
Mm-hmm. And the runoff.
And I, from the black, and I just flattened to her, I said, I don't know, I hadn't even thought of it. But I did tell him, I said, this is something you all should have been looking at years past. What's been, it's made racists see themselves, all of us. It's made racists see themselves. I really think it's, well, I hate to say it like this, because in every race we've got some who we call ourselves followers of Christ. Always we follow Christ. We know His word. But yet we fail to do it. And I think it's caused all of us to look at our Christian life and know that it has been flawed beyond measures, still flaws in them. There's still some flaws in them. Still some flaws in them. So.
Well, maybe we could talk a little bit then about after the Justice Department came in and said there had to be only one high school, the city of Lumberton tried another tactic, right, to keep the schools segregated. So let's talk about that.
Now, after he had built these two schools, two black high schools, and had to shut them down, then the city of Lumberton, the next tactic was to keep them from heavily mixing. Blacks had never in their life paid 1 cent to come to the city high schools and never been asked to if you lived out in the county. Whites had always paid if you lived in the county to come to the city schools. But after it was forced to integrate the school, the city school board gonna use the tactics, we're gonna charge the blacks. Now if they don't live in the city limit, we're going to charge them to come to school. And at the time, it was $35 a head. We're gonna charge them. And to them, they were saying that they knew that would eliminate a whole lot of black because they didn't have the money. And they were right. That was exactly right. So they put that fee on. They had a right to put it on if they wanted to. They were charging the but we knew the reason they were doing it.
Right.
To keep you out. They never done. So there were some parents, black parents, had 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 children in school, and they couldn't pay $35 a head. Majority of the blacks over in South Lumberton area, over in South Lumberton, the city limits at that time stopped up at a McMillan Funeral Home. Well, the city school board had already been and bought property out here where the high school, where the junior high is now, and had the city board to extend the city limits out there so they could build a school and have a property. And the city school, our city council did that. They actually did that. But they didn't include anything but just the highway. The residents on each side between McMillan's funeral home and his high school was in the county. Nothing but the highway, the road, street. So.
And who lived in those houses?
Blacks, nothing but blacks on both sides. They should that way now. So, these people came, they couldn't pay the $35 a head, so they came to me and asked me what I could do. Well, at that time, my daughter had finished high school, I just had a son, and he was just entering high school. Some of these parents, they had 5, 6, 7, 8 head children. So my response was, well, only one way in the world that you can, that we might be able to get any help. And that is through legal counsel. We cannot use any counsel here in London. Because it was nothing but white.
So you couldn't hire any lawyers because they were all white.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could hire them, but they weren't going to help us. So asked me if I knew that anybody might have.
Let's see. Now go ahead, Forrest. Julius Chambers.
Well, Julius had just sued UNC, the deal with, so he could go to school. Go to school there. So I contacted Julius, and he agreed to come and look our situation over and help us. So we were meeting at McMillan's funeral home. He came down twice, talked with us and looked the situation over. And the second time he left and went back, he called me and called me. He said, Angus, says I've been in communication with you, black city councilman. I've been in communication with your school board superintendent. Dr. Gale. I started that call. Dr. Gale. And he said,
Doctor, is it Gale, G-A-L-E?
Carol, C-A-L-E.
Oh, C-A-L-E. Oh, sorry. Okay. Okay.
He said, neither one of them want to compromise. So the fact the superintendent told me that he wasn't interested in meeting with our group over there. Nothing to do for him. He said the city council said that there was two different bodies. School board was independent. The city council was independent of the school board. Well, he said, now, Delton know I know better than that. He said, all city council work together with the school board on certain issues. He said, now, first place, the city council. The school board didn't run that, zigzag that line out there like it did to build that school. Said the city council had to put it out there. And I said, when they did it for the school board. He said, that councilman insulted my intelligence. Said, it really made me hot. Says, so I'm going to tell you what you do. He said, you get your group together down there. He said, because when they did that in the Book of Statutes of the State of North Carolina, he told me what that statute was. at that time, if you extended the settlement, you had to take into consideration all the customary of the residents. And they did not one. And I said, we're going to put heat to the seat. We're going to sue the school board and the city council. So it came down the third time. He said, be ready to show me what you want in the school district. That's the way he's going to approach it. And sue. So it came down, and the third time, and when we were getting ready to go, as I said, we always met at McMillan Funeral Home. Our black city councilman was in the rear. I didn't know he was in there, but when he heard Chambers make his plan, what he's going to do, he immediately jumped up and asked him, no, don't sue. We can help you. I can help you.
The city councilman jumped up and said that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't. So I made the stand and said, Lord, I said, didn't know you was back there. I said, you could have been helped us a long time ago and saved us more money than we put in our pocket. So, and Judy said, well, Angus says, it's whatever y'all want to do. So he told me, I said, well, we're ready to go and show you what we want. And I said, and this councilman didn't ask, could he go along with him? And Judy asked me, I said, sure, it's all right. I said, oh, we want to leave, he can go along. So he did. He came right along with us. And the whole while and joked the whole while we was out there. So after we began to show what we was going to do, I never forget, we got down to McCollum Street. And when we got to McCollum Street, the next street over was Starlight Drive. Nothing but Indians lived on Starlight Drive. Mm-hmm. Nothing but blacks lived on McCollum Street. So I suggested, I said, let's go down halfway between Starlight Drive and McCollum Street out to Fairmont Road. That's what it was at that time. It's Martin Luther King Road. This common suggested, no, let's go on to Starlight Drive. I just really going down. I said, look, I have not talked with those people on the Starlight Drive, which I had. I said, I don't even know what they want. I said, they're Indians. I says, I haven't talked with them. They may. I said, Mike, throw a monkey wrench in. Judy said, oh, that's all right, whatever you want. So we came on with the line, coming halfway between the two streets, got to Fairmont Road, and then we had to make a decision where we were going there. This company said, well, now we're going to go right straight on across here to Allen Street. That's kind of a left horizontal going on. Well, now I'm living, my resident is sitting now really on the other side of Starlight Drive. Right here where it is now. That's Starlight. And my son's, he's in school. And I want him in school. I want him. So, this council, Joe, he said, well, I you can pay $35. I said, yes, sir. I can pay you $35 to get my son in school. I said, but, I said, when we get through drawing this line, I said, I can just see the city council or the school board ain't going to let nobody that's beyond this school district line come in there. James said, you right. I said, what you want me to do? So I just suggested, I said, in order that my son may continue, so go right down Highway South, down the south line, include my own residence, then come on back up, then we'll go across the alley street. I said, he drew it on a piece of paper and wrote in there, include Angus Thompson resident. And it's in there, that was your name now. They hadn't thrown it away. Mm-hmm. And then we came on back to the funeral. And this comment said, now, I can take this and get it through you all, and the councilman, and Chambers. I said, what do you want to do? What do you want to do about that? I said, he can do it, and it don't make no difference. I said, as long as it's done. Mm-hmm. We just handed it over to him. He went, took it and went to the school board, and it was okay. It was okay, just as beautiful as ever.
They're like, sure.
Yeah. So he could have done it all the time. Then they begin to have problems. The whites begin to have a problem. Clive and Pine, Barker 10 Mile, all of those schools, they were out of the city limits, no school district. So they started crying. How could they get their children in the city limits? And the superintendent told him, said, do like South Bloomington. I'm listening to all that. Get your petition to get them in. I listened to that. I said, now, he wouldn't tell us nothing. But he's telling them now how to get in.
Now, is that Mr. Carroll?
Yeah, that's Carroll. Mm-hmm. Well, that's Carroll. Mm-hmm. So.
And, mm-hmm. You were telling me last time about a meeting that you were at.
All right, now.
At Carroll Middle School. Is that?
Yes.
This,
now.
That same,
yeah, this is the same
time
thing.
Period, late 1970s.
Yes. Now, I had a cousin, she was teaching over to Carroll Middle School, and she came in one day and called me to Miss Angus, says, they had a meeting over here, Clive and Pine, so these people had a meeting at the school. They want to get the children in the city school, and said, Lloyd Lee, well, he was school board, and I don't even think he knew what was going on.
Lloyd Lee?
Lawyer. L-A-W. He was L-A-W-Y-E-R.
Okay.
He was a speaker. Mm-hmm. And he was up telling all those people how hard the school boy, what they'd done for the school, how hard the school board had worked to get South Lumberton in. I said, he didn't know no better. She said, well, we're going to have another meeting. And this time it'll be the high school. And said, I'll let you know when they're going to have it. So they did. They had another meeting. So me and my wife, Angus was just out of law school, 1977. He was with us, but he won't say nothing. Mm-hmm. Me and my wife in the zone. Angus, with this meeting. And all this way. They were crying about what they could do to get the children in the city schools. And it was announced. Anybody had anything to say, and I all told them filled up. Feel free. All I had to do is go at the podium and talk. So I didn't even move until everybody finished. That wasn't nothing but white folks, the one that was complaining then. And Lid had told them how hard they worked to get soft number to the end and all that kind of stuff. Now, at that time, my pastor happened. He was on the school board. He was sitting on the stage. All the school board was sitting on the stage. Mm-hmm. My pastor was on it. So after it all finished, I got up and went down to the podium, all the way down. Told him who it was. I says, I want to set the record straight. I want them to know how South London got in to the school district. And I told them what we went through, that we had gotten Julius Chambers out of Charlotte, and he threatened a suit. Mm-hmm. And our black city councilman took the, after we showed him what we wanted in the school line, he drew it up. I said, our black city councilman was with us. He told that he could get it in. He could get this thing, agree to it, all this, and incorporated. And I said, so we let him do it. And I said, that's how we got in here. Not through them working for us. It's through a fight. And you could hear a rat drop on that card. When we came out, lady, what was the name of that woman organization?
I don't remember.
Boy, they covered me. I knew those white folks didn't know what was going on. So I said, yeah, that's how we got in here. And I showed them with the children growing up being misled.
You had to pay a lawyer.
Yeah, we had to fight to get in there.
Scrap
up
little dollars.
Yes, Lord. That's how we got in here. So, but anyway, the president of this, they came to me that night out there. They said that, and she left. Yeah, I know they wrong, but they got on us so bad that she left this place. I don't even know what happened to the organization, because she began to write up in the paper and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But even at that, later on when it came out in the paper, I said, didn't know anybody. Came out through the news media that the black city council fought for us to get in the school district. He didn't do nothing to keep a suit on him. We got it drawn up. But I can understand those things. They didn't know. That school board lawyer said, Angus said, I didn't know all that. I said, I know you didn't. I said, you didn't try to find out either. That's just what I told him. And I know. No, he didn't know it. But he was with them. He was lawyer, his wife. He could have found out, but there wasn't nobody caring about us. Yeah, do it for himself.
So. How did you get the money to pay Julius Chambers?
Oh, out of our pockets. No, we just out of our pockets. In fact, I told them, at that time I knew all we needed to do is take care of this man from Charlotte. He wasn't going to be charging us. Mm-hmm. And I think the first time he came down, it was about $35. That was all we gave him. And $5, that money, that big money, didn't it? But he loved it. That was a part of him. You know, NAACP was paying it. Of course, the NAACP has never been a money maker. You don't make nothing too much. That's what my son, as soon as he came out, he took him there, and he was made the state NAACP lawyer. Mm. But all that stuff worked well. And
were there members of the black community who were not part of the NAACP and who resisted what you were doing or disagreed with it? Or?
No. Well, now at the time, You know, I hate to tell you, but at that time, most of the blacks, well, first thing, the whites had picked out a leader for the blacks. White people picked out a black leader for the blacks. When I say the white, even if we elected him. That structure at that time, blacks were not thinking for themselves like they think now. The status quo was this. If you had some education or not, they were looking for somebody to follow. Not knowing for themselves. Why are we going to know about laws and all that? Never been exposed to that stuff. So we had black leaders. Well, not personally. I didn't agree with everything that these black leaders would say because our black leaders had this opinion they ever tell me. They bend to me and say, "Now, Angus, you come on and help push this bond issue and so your wife's teaching and you know she's got to have a job and all this and all that kind of stuff." That was the attitude and the way they felt. Go along with these white folks so they get the little cheese. Well, I don't even want this to go in there. But I think our black people are getting the money put in the pocket. Because I don't know that. But anyway, and I'll be backing it. And I told him, I said, "Well, I'll do anything. I'll run like a rabbit. Before I sell my people down the street."
Let me just cut this off. Okay,
that's
go ahead.
That's all we're doing. Now, the mass of the black people at that time, they were looking for a leader. And we had black leaders. But I'm going to tell you today, that's about faded out. That's all black people. You can give them $1, $2, they vote for anybody you see. They knew nothing about who's qualified or election. They didn't know. I don't know anybody who's on the ticket. And rightfully so. And pressed down. I didn't know about stuff like that. But, because I used to ask them a whole lot when I'd be in meetings, I'd come and say, "Well, who is the white leaders in here? You're talking about the black leader? Who y'all got leading you?" But, that was natural. It was somewhat comprehensive. But immigration has brought about now where the masters of blacks think for themselves. And that's why they think for themselves now. This integration, because I'm out there by myself fighting.
Is that what it felt like?
Oh yes,
by yourself.
Oh yeah, you take my wife right here. She's a member of a lot of civic clubs, sororities. But I never forget, we'd emigrated, and this is another thing I saw. We didn't have no city food. They were in the white section, North London. Got to complaining about we want a pool. But my idea was to build us a city pool. All right. You had to come up. Now, what are you going to put on a bond issue? The bill, a pool over here in Parkview, over here in South Lumina. Mm-hmm. I was against that. Mm-hmm. I said, they're thinking to build a mud hole over here so they can build a good. I said, no, we're just going to build one, build it centralized. And I was even fighting my wife's club because they were following that black leader at that time. And I was cussing her out too. I said, y'all give me money to do that. They're segregating again. But that fell too. We didn't build no pool now. And we don't have a city pool today. I'm telling you. I know it's true.
Do you ever think twice about that? Do you ever say, well, maybe I should, you know, some pool's better than no pool? I mean, do you ever say that to yourself?
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. I don't even think about it now because when if I say I don't think about it, people, blacks, they're where they can go somewhere and swim and things and so forth, but what I could see, they were going to do the same thing. What I tell you did about the schools? Big high school over there, black high school over here, white. They're going to put a city, little old pool over here, and build a fine pool up there. No, I'm going to not build one. So we didn't build none. It's obvious why we didn't build none. So, I know if they'd have built some other buildings, I'd say two before, it would just been some not well kept. I know that. Mm-hmm. If I don't know it, I feel it so strongly, I still know that.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't give a nickel.
Right.
As long as their children didn't have to get in it.
Right.
You know I know that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. Is there anything, you've said so many positive things about the results of integration,
mm-hmm.
and I wonder if there's anything you would look back and say was better under segregation than it is under integration?
You know, I guess I got a little bias in me. I've heard so many issues on what's better, but I never agreed with nothing I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they try to make an issue out of hauling children. Well, it would be better to for children not to have to ride so far. But let me tell you something. They were riding, when they segregated, they were riding far to keep segregated.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't go in there, if there was any in, they wouldn't go to black school. They'd bus them all the way to the white school.
Mm-hmm.
I hear about 6, 7, 8 mile out here, where I was born and lived. And they were busing children up here to London High School right there in front of my door. So that busing issue won't nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about busing, that's what you've always done, bus to keep from integrating.
Right.
Now they made you bus to integrate and you want to fight it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was just that true. But naturally, you have to understand things like that. Again, I just can't think of nothing that's, I can't. And I've heard so many things, but I don't know one thing I agree with about, and people right now, you can have some place that say, that could give you a reason why we should still be segregated. But to me, I haven't got enough something in me to understand how and where you say that. Because the good so much surpasses the bad, and if there's anything bad, the good will cover it up so that, so it's just been a blessing to me. Well, my son, you think my son would have been proper defender? Goodness, you're right. Now, he was the first black to join this Robinson County Bar. Mm-hmm. The same lawyer I was talking about, a school board lawyer, came to me after he said, after he joined the bar here, my son, said, so go make your son chaplain of the bar. They did. So he helped keep people quiet. Keep this. He said that to me. Yeah. I could laugh about it because I knew when he said it, man, you don't know what a fight you got on your hand. They made him chaplain. Mm-hmm. But he's also now been president of the Robinson County Bar. Oh, that's from this celebration. Mm-hmm. I don't know nothing that's bad about it. Mm-hmm. This stuff would not have happened.
What did you think about school merger when that happened in the 80s? What was your impressions of that movement?
Well, at the outset, I was for it. Mm-hmm. I was for it. Now, I tell you who was against it. I was 100% for it. It was being said, and I guess there's a little truth in it. At that time, the county schools were as well qualified as the city schools. And I'm quite sure that they couldn't offer what numbers offered and all that stuff. So we didn't have any real fight about merging because the mass of the people were county. Mm-hmm. And the county people, they knew. I just told you that they're fighting to get the children in the city school. That's why.
Because they wanted to improve their
They had more offered. The city school had more offered than the county school. Mm-hmm. That's why I wanted my boy in there. So I was 100% for it, even though I didn't have anybody in the county at the time. But my gracious, if all my black people out there, they me too. I'm one. So it's just a matter of unselfishness. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that would make the school become more on a level. You take right now, Wake County. I'd say even Guilford, Mecklenburg, those counties, they have more finance for pupils than I won't say we'll ever have. They have so much more to spend for children than we do down here. Mm-hmm. On the children. Because it's low income. Well, it's the same thing with the city and the county. Oh, the city school is so much more equipped than the county schools. There's no fun in it. Yeah. And that's one reason that the marriage, that we asked for marriage.
You think it's been successful?
Yes, yes, ma'am. I really do. You find somebody to give you a reason to have them, but I'll give you a whole lot that they have. Yes. it has been passed. It has upgraded Lodge County School. It's upgraded Lodge County School. Mm-hmm. And you get them all in the same pot. If you in that part over there, and I'm in this part, I don't know what you're doing or whatever, particularly. You don't know what I'm doing. You know what's going on, you know? And I fight for the part that I'm in this. So,
well, just my life. Yeah, there's one more question I had, you know, specifically, and then we can, then I wanted to see if there was anything else you wanted to say or anything else you felt like was important. But I was wondering, during this whole time, if you had ever felt like your work situation, was your employment was threatened in some way because of your political activity, or not threatened? Did you have experiences where people of different races that were actively supporting what you were doing and helping you? You know, you had mentioned how somebody would come to you and say, well, Mrs. Thompson mm-hmm. needs a job, and you know, she teaches school, and don't you want to go along with this, that, the other thing? And, you know, talk about that a little bit, if it's relevant.
At that particular time, first let me say this. I wasn't what you call selected leadership. I wasn't that. I wasn't selected leadership. And if you wasn't, you would left out, you suffer. Just like I told you, they bite you just like a dog. Mm-hmm. So you come on and go down. I've had them try to put on my head. But I haven't been hungry yet. Mm. If you don't follow, this was attitude. If you don't follow, we got a lot of that right now. If you don't follow, we're going to press you to the ground. Mm-hmm. Now, that was the attitude. That's about to say, come on, you know your wife got to have a job. You this and that. And shit. If you don't, we're going to put you out of business. Mm-hmm. They have tried that. Let me tell you what. Oh, you know, I'm not. This is an incident I've got to tell you. Listen. Never guess my fight so much. Well, at first, they fought me because of my daddy. Fought my son because of me. She knows all this. Listen, here he is, out of law school, comes to the city council, same black city council, to get out of law school, get some practice, office practice and stuff like that, the city. He's got his law degree now. And the city council will tell my son, well, excuse me, I don't mean that. Got nothing now but on a garbage truck. Really on the car. Now he's got his law degree. Right.
And offered him a job on a garbage truck.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, he's got a lot of money. That made him hot. At that particular time, if you tell him, say, tell him what you do. So if you pass the bar, you come back and talk with me again. And it wasn't a week before he got his mind from the bar. He passed it. I don't know where he went back and showed it to him or not. If he did, and this wasn't the right attitude, but if he did, he told him what he could kiss. So he jumps up and goes around against him. Well, I advised him, young. I said, don't, go run against the city council. Mm-hmm. And I advised him, I said, well, don't do that, said, you go ahead and just orient yourself good in your work and everything here, you know, law practicing and so forth, and wait later. He wasn't telling me why he wanted to run again, but I knew. So I said, I'm going to run. I said, well, now if you're going to run, I'm going to help you. So he got out there to run. I was going to this campaign, meet debates and things. I felt sorry for him at the time. This old head, but call him anything you don't know. But that was good for him. That's made him strong. It made him, you been like, always consider what Dad said, you boy. I don't care what you got. But unselected leadership, they were trying to press it to the ground. But you know, I came up on my granddaddy's poem. I didn't have to, never have to really work stoop for these white folks. Mm-hmm. And my daddy and just that. It was just in the blood. I never did much business. I never forget one day my mama got scared for me because I kind of put up. That was when I was in my teens. Having dinner one day heard somebody come through the house and here's a white man. Done come in the front door, coming down the hall. Nobody asked him. And I got up and gonna put him out. Now why would I do? I go to your house, I came to the back door. My granddaddy used to send me to that's white folks there and able to maybe borrow some bread, put in the back, different things, this thing like that. And I have to go to the back door and them dogs. Oh, it looked like they're going. They look out the window. Don't eat him. He ain't no boss. Don't eat him.
Ah! Man.
So, all that stuff stuck in me. Yeah. And that's what I said. Now, I have to go to it. But here you've done. Walk down through this house, just like it's yours. But that's my mama told me. I did get a bit scared. She told me, said, son, you talk to these white folks that. But bless her soul, she was right. She said, you find yourself hanging up in a tree out there. But God has just been good all the time. And even you take even my daddy. He fought, she was teaching down in Fairmont. Now listen to this. My mom was teaching down in Fairmont. Littlefield was the superintendent down there. He fired my, released her, I'll say fired my mom, or released her unjustly. And daddy sued the school board and they had to pay her for the time that she was out of work and then hire. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That actually happened. Mm-hmm. Oh, he was a fighter now. Mm-hmm. Now, after he did that, I never will forget one night, two white men came to, I was living out in the garden, came to our house, and they wanted to know the way to Bertha Singletary's. Bertha Singletary. It was a kind of late at night, my daddy had his shoes off and everything. He went to the door and he met them and told them how to get there. All they had to do was go straight down the road. But for some reason they couldn't understand. And he came back in there to get his shoes. My mama said, PJ? I said, what did you say? He said, that's what you call a Mr. PJ. He was about the same, he was known as PJ. He says, I'm going to show them. They're trying to go to Bert Singer. I'm going to show them. My mama said, Mr. VJ, says, you better watch what you're doing. I said, you know, you just sued that school board down there. I said, you. And my daddy went back there doing cussing people. So I told you how to get you. It wasn't 15 minutes. This was all Lord. A black man came in there, John Lassane, he the school teacher too. And he came through that bus saying, he came to us, said, when he got came out, he said, the Ku Klux Klan's after somebody, I don't know who. So down at the cross, it was in the station. So they stayed down at Boston Sanitaires. I said, Lord have mercy, Lord good. No, but they've been there to get my daddy. The Lord has been good. You know, Ava, I never will forget Mac when he came in, Mac Legerton. Lord knows if they won't ask me, I'd get so scared for that poor man. I said, Lord have mercy. I used to be with him a lot, do what I could. But when you go against the system, you can expect retaliation. Now you can believe that. Yes, when you go against the system, leadership, and all that stuff, you can expect retaliation. But it's all been good. White folks come ask me, the mayor right now, he doesn't even realize. The mayor, he's come to me and my wife all the time, support him, and he's running for mayor. I'm not even in the city.
But you have influence.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
That's why he wants your support.
Yeah.
Because you can influence the people that would vote for him.
But I don't know, is he real? That house over there is in the city. This one's in the city. Well, I'm not. And why I'm not in the city? Because all the stuff I've been telling you. They didn't want to deal with me. Because now I fight. Didn't want to deal with me. And really what happened, after I got the school district line drawn and all that stuff, and got all that stuff drawn, I was city councilman, went to Raleigh. Well, it didn't have to go to Raleigh. Tam Noble. He took Hector McLean's place, the senator, in Raleigh. Now, Sam Noble, me and Sam were close before he did that. And we were close. But he was against a lot of things this black councilman did. And he knew I was against it. Sam helped me out. Yeah, got the state to drain and all that stuff. But after Hector left, Sam Noble was appointed as state senator to fill out his term. The state council went up there and got him to draw up legislation to change the method of incorporating city land. And it was all because of me. Mm-hmm. Now,